Welcome to the Alcohol Debate Podcast. I'm your host, Tabin Ahmed, and I'm so thrilled you're here. If you're confused by seemingly contradictory information about alcohol, or you want to understand what's behind the explosion in alcohol-free drinks in the market, then this is the podcast for you. The alcohol debate isn't limited to our individual choices. It runs right through society at large. I'll be chatting with a wide range of experts to help separate myth from reality as we examine what booze does for us and what it does to us. So sit back and let's get stuck into the alcohol debate together. Hello, welcome to the Alcohol Debate Podcast. I'm your host, Tabin Ahmed, and I'm so pleased that you're here. In the last episode, I talked about my own story, and one of the features of that is the fact that I got breast cancer. I now know something I didn't know at the time, which is that there is a causal link between alcohol and breast cancer in women. And it's not just breast cancer. So what I want to do today is to share what I've learned about the close connection between alcohol and some cancers. The World Health Organization says that alcohol is a direct cause of 7 cancers. That's not to say they are the only cause, there may be other factors, but alcohol is cited by the WHO, and you don't get much better than that as a scientific authority. And it's cited as a cause in these 7 cancers. The cancer of the oral cavity, the mouth, what's called the oropharynx. I don't even know if I pronounced that right, but that's the part of the pharynx which is behind the mouth, and it's the walls of the throat, the tonsils, the back bit of your tongue, and the soft palate, which is that soft kind of muscly bit at the roof of your mouth. So the oral cavity and the oropharynx, the larynx, voice box, the esophagus, which is your throat, the breast, the liver, and the colorectum. Now, if people know anything at all about the sort of health risks of cancer, it's usually that they understand that drinking alcohol can damage the liver. And what people would know mostly is about fatty liver disease and cirrhosis. But cancer of the liver is a thing and is caused by alcohol. As I say, there are other factors with all of these, but we know that alcohol is a cause for all of these cancers. And we're talking some significant numbers. On the WHO website, the latest data is for 2018, so I'd love them to update that. But in Europe, in 2018, we know that alcohol caused more than 110,000 cases of cancer in men and more than 70,000 cases of cancer in women. And it caused almost 92,000 deaths from cancer. So alcohol killed 92,000 people from cancer alone in 2018 in Europe. So that's not counting the rest of the world, just in Europe. In women, most of these cancers are breast cancer, and in men, the majority are colorectal cancer, but not exclusively, but those are the big ones. You probably would think that you're only really going to be at risk of these alcohol-caused cancers if you're drinking really heavily. But I'm afraid that's not the case. You do not need to be a very heavy drinker to be putting yourself at risk. Even really, really modest levels of drinking will raise the risk of you getting cancer. And more than 1 in 10, so more than 10% of all the cancers which were causally linked to alcohol in Europe in 2018, and sorry that data isn't more up to date, but it's the latest that's been published. So more than 10% of them were due to drinking really modest levels. So we're talking one big bottle of beer, like 500 ml of beer a day, or 200 ml of wine a day. Now, if you bear in mind that a large glass in a pub is typically 250 ml, we're talking less than one large glass of wine a day or 60 ml of spirits. So we're really talking small amounts here. Now, another bit of bad news here is that if you also smoke, then the risks go up really quite steeply, quite quickly. So drinkers, even modest drinkers who also smoke, are really, really at much higher risk of developing one of these cancers. Never mind lung cancer, I'm not even going to get into lung cancer. If you do both, so you drink modestly and you smoke modestly, your chances of developing cancer of any of the sort of breathing apparatus, if you like, so the mouth, the oropharynx, the larynx and the esophagus, of developing cancer of any of those is 5 times higher, according to the WHO, than if you were somebody who just drank or just smoked. So doing both, you really are putting yourself at huge risk. And if you are a heavy drinker, oh boy, then it gets really serious. If you're a heavy drinker who also smokes, then the risks go up exponentially and really rapidly and can be as high as 30 times higher than for people who are modest drinkers. So that there's a really, a modest drinker who doesn't smoke versus a heavy drinker who does. The risk for the latter is anything up to 30 times greater. So these figures are quite scary. And if you're like me, you think, oh yeah, but that wouldn't happen to me. That's just stats. But I am one of those people. I didn't smoke, but I did drink and I got breast cancer, which is one of the cancers that is connected to drinking. So I kind of know firsthand that this isn't just kind of abstract and stuff that happens to other people. It happens to people like me. It happened to me. So I know what it's like. I also know that there is nothing more frightening. Well, I haven't lived through anything more frightening than being told. I think more frightening than being told I had cancer was being told that it had spread and it was in my lymph nodes. That scared me rigid. Now, there is good news, though, because we know that if somebody reduces their alcohol consumption, that can dramatically reduce the risk of them getting these cancers that are caused by alcohol. And as individuals, we can inform ourselves. Hopefully you are informing yourself just by listening to this podcast. And if that doesn't help you to change your behaviour, then there is plenty of help available. You can try AA, you can try hypnotherapy, you can try This Naked Mind, where there are free resources, you can try 1 Year No Beer. There are lots and lots of things you can try. And if you want to have a conversation about what your options are, please just go to my website, book a discovery call, and we can talk. There's absolutely zero obligation to have one-on-one coaching with me. I will steer you in the right direction. And I also have resources on my website that you can download, which will point you in the right direction for all sorts of different types of help. My aim is to help people inform themselves and get the help that they need if they need it. It's not just a matter of looking after ourselves, but we can also all play a part in creating a more questioning society. Our culture is not just in the UK, but in the Western world, our culture is quite alcohol-centric. We kind of celebrate alcohol, put it on a bit of a pedestal, and we can change that. We can challenge those norms as individuals, as employees, as business leaders. We can challenge these things. We can question the way that people kind of mindlessly organise social events that just revolve around alcohol. I was having a really interesting conversation the other day with a leader of an advertising group who was saying, yeah, we really are making an effort now to make sure that when we put on social events, they don't all revolve around alcohol and going to the pub or drinking, that we think of other things where people can get together, have fun, get to know each other, build bonds, create some social cohesion within the organisation, without requiring alcohol to do that job for us. And as for government, well, there is loads that governments could and should be doing. So I just want to run through these things a little bit. And it's particularly important in the UK. At some stage this year, we're going to have an election. I'd love these things to be on the agenda. I'm not naive enough to think they will be, but I would love it if they were. Firstly, and these are all things that the WHO has pointed out would make a material difference to how many people drink. The first thing we could do is make alcohol less affordable. Make it more expensive. Of course there'd be a backlash. That would not be a popular move. But it's been really successful with tobacco, hasn't it? There's been ever-increasing duty on tobacco, and we've seen smoking rates decrease in a pretty much a straight line in accordance with the price. And we also know this has actually been done in Scotland. In Scotland, there is this thing called minimum unit pricing. So there is this, you know, alcohol may not be sold at less than a certain price per unit in Scotland. And that's really, really made a difference. Scotland still has a problem, for sure, but the problem is not as great as it was. So we know that putting up prices does mean that consumption goes down. And I think that achieving the goal of consumption going down has to be more important than avoiding some negative headlines in the tabloids. Of course, the tabloid press will accuse the government of nanny statism. But I believe that government has a responsibility to look after citizens. And if you bear in mind how much pro-alcohol messaging there is out there from the alcohol companies, from the way that alcohol is portrayed in TV and films, etc., I think the government has a duty to present the counter-argument a little bit. Second thing governments could do is tighten up the rules about advertising and marketing of alcohol, and particularly on social media, which is a bit of a free-for-all. We actually, certainly in the UK, have pretty good rules about what can be said about alcohol in ads in conventional media, TV, radio, etc. But online, it is a bit of a free-for-all, particularly in social media. But other countries are kind of quite a way ahead of us. I've spent quite a lot of time in France, and they have very strict rules. First of all, if you advertise alcohol in France, it kind of has to carry a health warning. And the warning translates to something along the lines of abuse of alcohol is dangerous to your health. Consume it in moderation. Now, that's not perfect advice, because anybody who's addicted to alcohol will look at that and think, yeah, well, I would if I could, but I can't consume it in moderation. I'm addicted. So it's not perfect, but it's better than giving no advice and not pointing out at all that there are any health risks. When it comes to sponsorship, which is much more subliminal, the French actually have a ban on any direct or indirect propaganda or advertising in favour of alcoholic drinks. So it's just simply forbidden with sponsorship. And you might actually have noticed that with the Rugby World Cup last year, that was sponsored not by Asahi, which is the Japanese beer that's got alcohol in it, but by their Asahi Zero brand, which is alcohol-free. They also, very interestingly, for the Man of the Match Awards, they did something which was fantastic. If you think back a while ago, Man of the Match Awards were typically the player would be, or player of the match, I think we're supposed to say nowadays, aren't we? The player would be given a bottle of champagne, and that would either be drunk in the changing room or sprayed all over everybody. But it was giving alcohol that job of, you know, being associated with celebration and performance. And there is nothing more insane than associating alcohol with sporting prowess. It just, the two do not compute. And I will be running an episode or two on that later on. But what they did in the Rugby World Cup was it was sponsored by MasterCard. And the award was a little trophy. And embedded in that is like a little sound file, which is clips from the home broadcaster for that country. So if it was a Frenchman, if it had been Antoine Dupont winning the Man of the Match Award, and I'm sure he did get one, then it would have been the French broadcaster, and it was clips of the commentary about him in that game, saying how well he played and what a fantastic pass, a great try and wonderful handoff or whatever. And so, and that's embedded into this little trophy and can be played. And I think that's just fantastic. It's nothing to do with alcohol, and it's celebrating what it was that made that player's performance so outstanding in that game. And that's something that can be passed on. I can imagine that, you know, the player's children, maybe even their grandchildren, will say, oh, look, let's have a look at this. Let's listen back to what Grandpa did in that game back in the Rugby World Cup of 2023. That is a true celebration of a Man of the Match performance to me. So much more powerful than a bottle of champagne, and nothing to do with alcohol, and entirely in keeping with the spirit of sporting achievement. I just love that. Another thing that governments could do to help change the number of people becoming addicted to alcohol would be to reduce the availability of alcohol. A while ago, certainly in this country, we saw the freeing up of licensing laws, and that coincided with increases in numbers of people becoming addicted, and therefore also number of people developing serious illnesses, including cancer, as a result of their drinking. So both in the on-trade, so licensed premises, you know, pubs, clubs, bars, and also in the off-trade, retail, there is scope for just limiting the availability of alcohol. To be honest, in this country, you can buy alcohol pretty much any time, day or night. And in fact, probably any time, day or night. Supermarkets are closed for a period on Sundays. They close, they're only allowed to be open normally for 6 hours, I believe, on a Sunday. But convenience stores, garages and places are open 24/7, and a lot of them sell alcohol. So if you want to in the UK, you can pretty much buy alcohol whenever you want. And there may be scope for just tightening that up and reducing those times just to help people not buy alcohol when they're already drunk, basically. And another thing governments could do is just do way, way more to educate people about the health risks in drinking alcohol. I bet that most people listening to this today did not know about alcohol being a cause of 7 different cancers. They might have thought there might be a vague connection, possibly, but to be cited by the WHO as a cause, I bet very few people knew that. Back when I was drinking, certainly, I had no idea that I was putting myself at increased risk of getting breast cancer. And really interestingly, no one medical has ever mentioned that link to me. Now, my cancer was 10 years ago, but I speak to people who've been recently diagnosed or who are going through treatment now, and it still isn't mentioned. At the very least, it might be a good idea to tell patients about the links so they can make an informed decision about whether or not to continue to drink. Now, it's Ireland that's actually leading the way here. From 2026 onwards, they now have legislation in place that says that all alcohol products that are sold in Ireland after 2026 will have to have comprehensive labelling about the health risks involved in consuming alcohol. And those will include warnings about developing cancer as a result of drinking alcohol. And they're the first country in Europe to do this, and only the second in the world after South Korea. Something I found fascinating was that before they brought in this new legislation, the Irish conducted a health survey. And there are a couple of statistics that really blew my mind. One was that in that survey, 7% of respondents believed that it was actually safe to consume a small amount of alcohol in pregnancy. And even when I was having my children 30 years ago, we knew that that wasn't the case. And there's still 7% of people who think that it is okay to be drinking in pregnancy, albeit a small amount. But really? I found that amazing. And staggeringly, almost 80% were unaware that the risk of diseases like breast cancer was higher if you were drinking. And that figure was even higher than 80% amongst young people. So there really is a very, very strong case for education here. And we know from the experience with tobacco that warnings on pack really do help to increase understanding. Smokers, I used to work on the Government Health Education Authority anti-smoking campaign. And we knew that even if they disregarded the warnings did communicate to smokers, did say, you are at risk of getting lung cancer and all sorts of other nasty things by smoking. Now, when we're young, we maybe think that won't happen to us, but at least we're aware of the risk. At the moment, judging by the Irish experience, people are not even aware of that risk. And I know from personal experience, I wasn't. So I personally really, really hope that other countries are going to follow Ireland's lead. If they do, lives will be saved and countless families are going to be saved from an awful lot of unhappiness. So I really, really hope that happens. So I don't mean to have frightened anybody with this, but I do believe that information on this is really key. In future episodes, I will be covering other health risks that are associated with alcohol. Cancer is the one that's touched me, so I've started with that. Excuse me, sorry, it's very sort of self-obsessed of me maybe. But I think also it's quite possibly the one that's least well understood. But in future episodes, I will be talking about other health risks and I'll be speaking to some medical professionals who will explain why it is that alcohol contributes to these health risks. But for now, anything that comes up, please do have a look at the WHO website and you will get more information there. Finally, I'll leave you with the fact that the WHO's advice is that when it comes to cancer, the only safe level of drinking is zero. I don't expect you all to implement that straight away, but just being aware of that is a good thing. And being aware of the risks that we're running when we do choose to drink alcohol, I think is important. So I'll look forward to seeing you next time. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Alcohol Debate Podcast, where we set out to separate myth from reality as we explore what alcohol does for us and what it does to us as individuals and as a society. Why we love booze and why there are times when we really don't love it at all. If you would like to know more about today's topic, please head for my website, winetowatercoaching.com, where you'll find further information and worksheets for the tips and tactics that I share. That's winetowatercoaching.com, and the two is T-O, winetowatercoaching.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Facebook and LinkedIn. Just search for Wine to Water Coaching. If you've enjoyed this episode, please hit subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcasts. And please do rate it and review it, as it will help other people find the show and get answers to their questions on the truth about booze. And I hope you'll join me again soon for another episode of the Alcohol Debate Podcast.